Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Remember FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And as we do every Monday at 9 o'clock, we welcome in our good friend Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donica Chase. And Darren also handles the pre- and post-game duties for the Nashville Predators Radio Network. Darren, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm wearing my safety goggles just in case I don't give you the answers you're looking for. I just want to make sure I'm covered. I've got my eyesight.
Well,
you know?
That's good.
Safety first.
Safety first is a big thing. I can report to you that Joe Rex Road, despite being on the field at Neyland Stadium Saturday night, remain unscathed. No water bottles, mustard bottles, or anything of the like hitting him in his escapades out there.
Do we think at any point Joe grabbed a chair and protected himself with a chair? This time, the chair was working in his favor.
Well,
do we think that happened?
Could be.
In Knoxville.
Joe, can you confirm?
I did not. I mean, I'm trying not to touch chairs anymore. They just dissolve when I get near them. But, you know, my agility carried me through. Couple of times I had to sidestep a little bit, but that was fine.
Really impressive athleticism from Rex Road.
As usual.
On Saturday night. So, Darren, obviously the Nashville Predators not off to the start they envisioned. 0-2, they've got the L.A. Kings coming in tomorrow with Victor Arvidsson making his return to Bridgestone Arena. What has stood out to you so far through the first two games for the Predators?
What stood out is, you know, you're starting off your season with a nice homestand to kick things off. You know, it's got a new look, but not really a huge look. I mean, I think that's why David Poile said on our show, like, hey, I'd like to have back – you know, use that, take that word rebuild, shove that aside, transition, because there's not, you know, rebuild suggests you've got basically a whole new roster, and that's not the case. This offseason, and you start off at home, everything that's been said, like to see a little bit, you know, I thought I would see a little bit more inspired team. I thought there were times when it was good. There was times when I was like, eh. You know, it's just like, eh. You're at home, the crowd's into it. And, you know, the players have talked about how much the crowd has meant to them. Some of the new faces wanted to see. There was question marks. Okay, what is it going to look like? So far, you know, obviously Tomasino, I mean, nobody's expecting him to come out there and have a hat trick to begin his NHL career. But, you know, on Thursday night, he looked like a guy playing his, you know, his first ever NHL game. And so that, you know, that played out the way you – so you don't say anything about that. He's got a long ways to go in his career. Cody Glass, so far, I mean, just there's been nothing. And I get it. He was centering the fourth line. So I don't know exactly what you're looking out of a fourth line centerman on Saturday night against Carolina. But so far, I'd like to see a little bit more from him. I guess to answer it, I mean, the first line has been good. Obviously, they were productive on Saturday night with Johansson's goal and then Forsberg's late goal. And, you know, if you look at the numbers – Thursday, the numbers say that they were good. They weren't showing up on the stat sheet, but the numbers say they were good. They're going to need more, but overall, I would say that I was just a little surprised that they kind of looked like me in school. You know, it's just like, wasn't a great student, wasn't a horrible student. I was just kind of a okay student, and it just kind of looked okay the first two games.
Yeah, but I know the jean jacket and mullet were badass, so
that's right.
I mean, you know, make up for some other stuff, right?
Actually, I did have both of those.
Check mark on both those things.
So here's what I'm confused.
I may or may not have wore parachute pants too, Joe. Just saying.
Oh, no, I had some sweet ones. Did you have a Whitesnake jean jacket?
No, I did not.
Okay.
No.
All right.
No.
Okay. All right.
Did you?
No, but I mean, I remember those.
There yeah, I do too. I did
Motley
not have
Crew?
Those.
We can go through it. We can go
just
through
going
all the,
through the checklist.
I hope not poison or warrant. All right, so here's what I'm confused by, Darren. So Tomasino, like you said, no one's surprised he doesn't come out and just set the world on fire, but then he's a scratch in game two, and now Cap Friendly reporting that Cody Glass is sent to Milwaukee after two games. It seems awfully fast to – make judgments on those guys, I guess? Like, are you surprised by this?
Well, I mean, right now, while everybody's upright and healthy, we know there is a numbers game, and so there's a lot of guys that they know they could be using that are just sitting there saying, hey, I'm waiting for my turn. So the Cody Glass one, yeah, if that's true. I mean, obviously, we haven't seen anything confirmed on that front by the Predators, but I think all three of us were included And somebody tweeted at us and said that. And, yep. and as you said, Cat Friendly did put that out there. So I'm not sure whether that's true or not. So that does seem a little bit early for him. I mean, the Tomasino thing, not really that surprised, because I think if the three of us talked about this during camp and preseason, did we not, or as it wrapped up, I mean, I think if we were being honest, as much as we're rooting for Tomasino and think the future is bright, I don't think anybody was blown away by his camp or preseason. In fact, I think I said to you guys, I know I said on our show, I thought Afanasyev was better than Tomasino in camp. That's just my opinion. Obviously, they felt differently. So, I mean, I guess I'm not surprised on that front. The Cody Glass part does surprise me. I think I've been more surprised, Joe, that you're trying to put these young guys in a position to see if they can succeed. And typically, if you want them to succeed, they're going to be a little bit higher up in the lineup. You're going to, you know, probably be top six. I get it. That's maybe asking a lot. But if you truly want to put them in the best spot to succeed, I don't really know if, you know, third and fourth lines is the best time to, you know, or the best place to put them for that. Obviously they felt differently, so I would be surprised if it is true about Cody Glass, because that seems a little quick for two games in.
Darren McFarland on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. And Darren, obviously, I mean, we talked to you about it last week. A lot of eyes going to be on that trio of Forsberg, Johansson, and Duchesne. Johansson gets the goal Saturday night. Forsberg scores one late. By the way,
pretty goal by Johansson.
Yeah, pretty goal by Johansson. Great play in the neutral zone by him. And they've got the scoring when they're down by two goals with 40 seconds left down pat early the season so far. But overall, what have you made of those three as a line so far together through two games?
I think they've been playing hard. I think they have looked good. I mean, it's just going back to, you know, when you think of any sport, somebody that plays in a very important position, and we know a top line in hockey is an important position, go around the league, you are expecting, you know, certain things. You are expecting production night in and night out on a consistent basis. That's why you're on a top line. Is that fair? I mean, I don't know what's fair or not fair. You get paid quite handsomely to be on a top line, and so I would say it's probably fair because that's what you're getting paid to do. And I think so far it's been good. Can it be better? I think so, if they're looking, you know, to prove everybody wrong, right? I think that's what we've talked about. It's like, it really, nobody's picking this a different spot than they've been in, you know, the last like 5 years, where they were the sexy pick. Everybody was picking them. There were huge expectations, and that's not the case this year. And, you know, you've heard players, you've heard people come out and say, hey, let's see if they can prove everybody wrong. And you can use that as motivation behind the scenes to do that. You're just going to have to get production and more production from that line, because right now, where else is the production coming from? I mean, who else are you expecting? I mean, think about the guys that they've lost. This is what we've talked about, right? Who's going to fill those gaps? You just talked about Victor Arvidsson coming to town on Tuesday. I saw he had a power play goal on Saturday night for L.A. I mean, he's a guy that, when healthy and in the lineup, was productive for the Predators. I mean, you know, Kalle Järnkrok was steady and productive. Who's replacing those goals? Who's replacing that production? Right now, we haven't seen it really from anybody else. It's two games. I get it. But they're going to have to get, you know, more production elsewhere and, you know, to get back on track. They're just going to have to play better. They're going to have to get more production. But overall, Robbie, I mean, I would give them a good solid B. There's nothing wrong with that. But I do think they need to be better if this team is going to be, you know, find the success in playing more hockey than 82 games. They're going to need more production out of them.
Okay, what's happening at Nissan Stadium tonight, Darren?
A little Monday Night Football.
Sure is.
And what's going to happen in the game?
Oh, what's going to happen? Like prediction.
Yeah, tell me, well, what's going to happen.
I hate to say this. This may be under the category of too soon, but I hope everything is, you know, on the up and up over there. I mean, there is a Bills Mafia in town, which has been, you know,
it's been doing
cited.
Some damage this weekend,
I mean, I'm concerned. Like, I want to make sure these officials have a good game. I mean, I don't want to see, you know, Knoxville 2.0 at Nissan Stadium on Monday night. I mean, this is going to be a rowdy place tonight, and I expect a good game. Joe, this is where, you know, Mike Vrabel shines. He just does. I don't know how he does it. But this is where they step up. It's a game that you don't think they have a chance. I don't know how they do it, but I thought the same thing last year against Buffalo. But I think, unfortunately for them, this Buffalo team is even better than last year's team that went to the conference final. They're just – when you try to find holes for this team, it's hard to find it. I mean, they're so good on offense. They're so good on defense. But, you know, we didn't think they really – did anybody pick them to beat Seattle in game two?
No. Not many.
Not many, right? And they went in there and they took care of business. So I expected a good – I took the chicken bleep answer. I took the Titans plus the points and pick six. I didn't come out there and say they're going to win. Would I be surprised if they won? No, but if you're asking me to actually pick a team who's going to win, I would say probably the Bills in a close one.
Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donick and Chase, also handles the Predators pre- and post-game duties for the National Predators Radio Network, joins us every Monday here at 9 o'clock on Robbie and Rex Show. Darren, great stuff, my friend. Appreciate you taking time to join us and looking forward to the show coming up at 10 o'clock.
Guys, thank you as always. Nickelback rules.
Yes, there we go. Very well done by Darren McFarland to close that one out there. Much to the delight of Joe Rexroad as well.
I don't hate Nickelback like everybody else.
Just Creed.
I would, if you forced me to listen to an album by a band, I'll pick Nickelback over Creed.
There you go.
And Blink-182 and Live and Bush.
102.5 The Game has your chance to win Preds tickets during the month of October. Just post a picture of your radio dial set to 102.5 The Game on social media. Tag the game and use hashtag TicketDash to be instantly qualified to win. Show us your dash, brought to you by Social Furniture. Support local, support social. We'll continue the conversation on the Predators when we come back. Got more of your thoughts to get to on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from Rock Bottom Brewery. Today, the NFL pregame show features Jarrett Stillman, Mark Howard, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders. Join them from 5 to 7 p.m. live at Rock Bottom Brewery on Broadway prior to the Titans taking on the Buffalo Bills. The NFL pregame show brought to you by TriStar Moving, Parma Tractor and Equipment, FreedomTireGuys.com, FanDuel, E2 Roofing, Hillside Medical, Social Furniture, and Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. A little Nickelback.
They are pretty bad.
The Nickelback was for Darren McFarland.
Nickelback is pretty bad. Do you think Coach O listens to Nickelback while doing squat thrusts?
Probably so.
Also,
probably.
I heard on the broadcast.
What a mental image that is. Yep, probably so.
One more.
Coach O runs around campus with his shirt off.
Of course he does.
I heard that on the broadcast.
Yeah, of course
he does. That's interesting.
Hey, man, just in case anybody likes what they see, Coach O's, Coach O's available.
Lots of SEC or former SEC coaches really out there the last couple of weeks in the news. It's good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Some interesting pictures of Coach O.
I've seen some of those as well. Interesting time.
Good luck moving forward.
That's right. Joe, the Nashville Predators 0-2 to begin the season. I was in the house on Saturday night. They actually played pretty well against Carolina. I mean, they end up with 40 shots. I thought Freddie Anderson and goal played pretty well for the Hurricanes. And the Predators, I mean, it wasn't like they were overwhelmed by any stretch of the imagination against Carolina in that game. But the end of the game comes. It's a 1-1 game. You've got to make a play. And the Predators, instead of being the ones to make the play, Andrei Svechnikov is the one to make the play. He scores. They go up 2-1. Carolina grabs the empty netter. Philip Forsberg comes back and scores again, but at the end of the day, it's too late, and now the Predators sit here 0-2. You know, there's 80 games left, so I'm not going to read too much into it so far. They've got to be better. I mean, they've just not been very threatening so far offensively, and, you know, I think Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne have had their moments. It's still not been good enough, not really close to good enough from my vantage point through two games. So they've got a lot to continue to work on and figure out here. The more intriguing and, to your point, I think confusing part is what exactly are they doing with the young guys? Because we've talked about the youth movement. I get it. It's more about the 82-game process than it is through the first couple of games. But you got Philip Tomasino as a healthy scratch on Saturday night. Rocco Grimaldi comes in. You move Cody Glass down to centering that line with Grimaldi and Nick Cousins. And now the reports are out that Cody Glass has been sent to the American Hockey League. So you're two games in. Cody Glass, albeit has not been very impressive, and quite frankly, I've not really noticed him all that much. We're two games in, and apparently he's going to the AHL, and Tomasino was a healthy scratch in game two. It's very weird.
Maybe don't give anyone the number eight anymore. Like, yeah. Just retire just that number.
Take that away.
I mean, is Cap Friendly reliable on something like this?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's bizarre to me. That one, I guess a little bit. Okay, Tomasino, it's going to be a little platoon situation here. You get Rocco, and that's fine. I mean, he's still going to probably be back in there soon. But actually sending Glass down after two games.
Look, he's not been impressive. And I didn't think he was all that impressive during training camp and preseason too. But it is two games. Like, do they think he's that far off? Because if he's that far off, that's not very encouraging.
Let's revisit that trade again. Then. Yeah.
I mean, look, I don't think there's any way to get around. He has not lived up to expectation throughout his career so far based on where he was drafted. Now, you're hoping you can find a diamond in the rough if you're Poile and maybe get him to realize that potential here. I mean, he'll probably be up again at some point here, and it's probably not going to be the world's biggest deal at the end of the day that he's got sent down two games in. To me, that doesn't make much sense in terms of what you've been selling in terms of your vision for this group to get younger.
No, yeah. I mean, obviously right now you get into the season and you're trying to come up with whatever your best lineup is to win, which, again, last year early in the season they weren't winning. They weren't going young. So that's a bad combination in terms of making your fans happy, right? Like, do one or the other at least. Then they actually did both. So it's like, okay, so stick young, stay young, see it through. But look, you're in this right now, and John Hines has got the coach and the GM cannot always work in concert. Coach now has to figure out whatever gives them the best chance on a given night to win a hockey game, period.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Steve, who wants to weigh in on the Preds. Steve, thanks for calling in to Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, guys. Good morning. I really enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I just got 3 points. I just thought of another one. I was waiting. But why do we pull the goalie? I know why, but our defense is so bad that the last two games, I knew they were going to score once they pulled Saros, and they did. And also, we're talking about these new players. I don't know why they let Holla go. I mean, I talked about this with somebody else, and they said that they wanted to keep Granlund instead. But, okay, keep Granlund, but let somebody else. Holla was really good. And got a third point, but I can't recall what it was. But it just – oh, yeah. Looking at the New York Islanders, I mean, last year during the playoffs, their power play was incredible. But ours has never been anything like that. Is it our talent? Is it our players? Or is it our coaching? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for the call, Steve. So, look, I mean, the empty net thing, it just is what it is. I mean, every team does that to some degree. You're going to pull the goalie to try to score. And, look, more times than not, it's going to backfire on you. But you've reached the point in the game where that's what you got to do. I mean, you got to be in desperation mode at that point, try to tie it up.
Yeah, I mean, right. And, I mean, I guess in particular, if you're struggling in general to generate offense 5-on-5. But, yeah, of course, you got to do that at some point. It's way earlier now.
Now, it does kind of sting when you pull the goalie, and now score. You're down two, and then you come back like 30 seconds later and you put one in the back of the net.
Right. Like the winning goal the last two games, both losses are the empty net goals.
Empty net goals,
right?
Yeah. So that one stings a little bit.
It does, but. Yeah, you don't stop doing it.
You don't. You know, as far as, you know, the power play, you know, I actually think the power play's looked okay so far. I mean, they're not going to score every time. They scored on the 5-on-3. They've had some good looks. They had one power play in particular on Saturday that was awful, where they couldn't even get set up. But the power play two games in is not a gigantic point of concern for me as of yet. Now, I will say this. I don't know that 5-on-5 this team is going to be very dangerous offensively. So when you do get your power play opportunities, I think it's important for this group to be up there in terms of the power play. Because if you're not, like, I don't know where the goals are going to come from. Like, we've talked about that with this group. It's a big problem. We knew it was going to be an issue coming into the season about where the offense was going to come from. And, you know, right now they're two games in, and They just have not been very dangerous offensively. And it's one thing to get the chances. I thought they got the chances Saturday night. But getting the chances and finishing on the chances are two different things, and that's been an issue for a while.
Well, I don't understand why Tolvanen isn't on the first unit.
Yeah, I mean, right now they're working with Forsberg, Johansson, Duchesne on that first unit, and they've got, you know,
Josi
and Granlund, I think, is that first unit.
Yeah.
So I would imagine at some point that'll switch up. I liked having Forsberg and Tolvanen together. I can see the appeal where you spread them out and you've got two good options on both units, but I don't think Tolvanen's gotten very many good looks so far on the power play.
And I thought the best their power play has looked probably since I've been here, six seasons, was during that stretch last year with Forsberg on the right, Tolvanen on the left, and you got to make a choice, and they're moving the puck to each other really well. And
right.
I think I'd try to condense things into one unit that you really feel good about.
They've already put the defense pairings in the jumbler a little bit. The other night started with Josi Carrier, Ekholm Myers, Borowiecki, and Fabbro. By the time the game was over, it was Josi Fabbro, Ekholm and Carrier, and Borowiecki, Philip Myers. Observations through two games, and we've talked about the Cody Glass part of this trade. Philip Myers has not been very good through two games. He is not a top four defenseman. So
again, look at that trade.
Yeah.
Two games.
It's two games. Two it's games. Very early. I don't really like to make any sweeping judgments on a hockey team. Two games
in. Wait until like four games.
Yeah,
they lose
exactly.
Two more in a row.
But in all seriousness, like around the 10, 15, 20 game mark, I start to be like, okay, well, these are the foundation pieces of what this team is. Like right now, the Buffalo Sabres are 2-0. I can pretty much tell you the Buffalo Sabres are not very good, but they're 2-0 right now. So it is what it is, but the Predators got a lot of work to do.
Red Wings almost got a big win over Tampa Bay.
Did. And then they totally
and then they,
screwed
and then they
it
didn't.
Up. When we come back, we'll be joined by Jason Wolf from the Buffalo News. Get his thoughts on the Bills as they take on the Titans tonight on Monday Night Football. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, conveniently serving Middle Tennessee with 13 locations. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Looking ahead to Bills and Titans tonight at Nissan Stadium. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our buddy Jason Wolf from the Buffalo News, friend of Nashville as well. Jason, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Gentlemen, how are you guys?
We are great.
Good.
Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. So, Jason, obviously a lot to get into tonight between the Bills and the Titans. Let's just start with the Bills ever since the Pittsburgh game. How have they been able to do what they've done offensively? And in your mind, has Josh Allen gotten even better this year than he was a year ago?
It's hard to say that he's better than he was a year ago. I mean, the guy finished runner-up to Aaron Rodgers for MVP of the league. It was a pretty remarkable performance last year, especially because nobody quite expected him to put on that show. You know, his first couple years in the league, he had problems with accuracy. He turned the ball over quite a bit, especially when he was on the run. And last year, he really put it all together. And, of course, that coincides with Stephon Diggs coming to Buffalo. This year, they got off to a tough start. You know, they lost that game to Pittsburgh. The offense really wasn't doing anything. And then, you know, just by looking at the scores, they've dominated ever since. But I'll tell you what, week two, they went into Miami, and they won that game 35-0, and nobody on the Bills was happy about their performance. I mean, they struggled throughout the first half. The defense dominated, obviously, with their first of two shutouts in 3 weeks. But the offense struggled to move the ball in the first half. They pulled away late, and the score ended up looking worse than what it was. But, you know, when a team in the NFL beats an opponent on the road, a division rival, 35-0, and they're not satisfied with their performance, I mean, I thought that spoke volumes about where the Bills are now compared to where they were even last season. So, you know, I don't know that Josh Allen's playing better than he was a year ago, but this team is certainly turned into a group that goes out there and expects to dominate every week. And so, I mean, this will be a long conversation between us, but right now I don't know that there's another team in the AFC, at least, that can hang with these guys.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, Jason. I mean, like you said, they go crush Miami. Miami has issues. We know Houston is terrible, and Washington's not very good. So you could look at what they had done in that stretch and be like, okay, let's show us something. But then, of course, they did show something. And I know Kansas City has also not been up to par, but I was most impressed in that game with the defense of Buffalo, especially just – I know Kansas City invested a lot to try to rebuild that offensive line. Man, they couldn't deal with the Bills. Oliver, I feel like Rousseau as a rookie looks really good. And so Milano, I believe, is playing. How good is that defense? How much better is that defense? Is that something that's clearly, I guess, upgraded from last year to this year?
Well, you know, the defense has been one of the Bills' strong suits for many years, even going back to Josh Allen's rookie season. This was a team that when it won, it relied on its defense. And a big part of the Bills' success, you can look at Josh Allen's development, but, you know, these guys returned virtually every starter from last season's team that went to the AFC title game. And beyond that, you know, that consistency extends into the coaching staff. They have the same head coach. They have the same coordinators for 3-4 years. And so guys talk all the time about how comfortable they feel in the system right now. And, you know, the defense is no exception. You know, the offense grabs all the headlines. But the defense, they brought back everybody from a year ago, essentially, and Star Lotulelei, the nose tackle, who, you know, was the only guy who opted out last season because of COVID. So he instantly improves the run defense. You know, he frees up the linebackers to be able to, you know, attack the gaps and move sideline to sideline. I don't know that there's another linebacker in the league, another better off-the-ball linebacker in the league than Matt Milano. So the fact that they were able to go into Kansas City last week, like you said, there were questions about how good this team really was because they were sort of beating up on cupcakes. You go into Kansas City and you beat the Chiefs by 3 scores and you're missing, you know, your top linebacker. That was a heck of a feat.
Jason Wolf from the Buffalo News on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Jason, with that in mind, it's no secret Derrick Henry is going to get the ball a lot tonight for the Titans. How equipped is this Buffalo defense to deal with him? And what are your impressions on Derrick Henry and what he's become in this league?
You know, I was there when Derrick was a rookie, when he was playing behind DeMarco Murray and for his first couple of years in the league. And, I mean, Joe, you and I spoke all the time. I was always sort of surprised that Derrick wasn't more of a beast that we saw when he was at Alabama, right? That never really translated in his first few years in the league for whatever reason. And I know he was behind DeMarco and all that, but you know, I think it was – And you guys would know this as well. I think it was when Eddie George really took him under his wing a little bit when he started actually coming into his own and bowling guys over. And, I mean, there isn't another running back in the league like Derrick Henry. I mean, that guy was built like a superhero, you know. And I just remember seeing him, what, like his rookie season next to, what was it, Dexter McCluster on the field? You know, he's an absolute monster of a human being. So it doesn't surprise me what Derrick Henry has become. I think, if anything, I was a little surprised that he wasn't doing this a little bit earlier in his career. But, I mean, God, that guy's impressive. And, you know, the Bills are going to have their hands full with him. They're not going to face another running back like him because, quite frankly, there really isn't one. You know, it is a little bit different defense than it was a year ago, you know, what Buffalo's bringing just as far as the run defense, because Star Lotulelei is back. And, you know, Bills fans were kind of down on him a couple years back because he doesn't put up the traditional statistics, you know. But he changes the game, and everybody got a real clear picture of what Star brings to the table when he wasn't there last year. So, and look, this defense is healthy. They've got Lotulelei in the middle. They are as prepared to take on Derrick Henry as they possibly can be. They've seen him, you know, each of the last few years. It's going to be a heck of a challenge, but I'm sure they're ready for it.
Yeah, actually, I think it would have been your next to last game on the beat was Derrick having a huge game in that win at Kansas City, which everybody remember that game. Yep. For Mariota throwing the self-TD pass, but that was really – like a Derrick Henry kind of coming out party. But, yeah, it still was still way into the next year before he sort of found put it all together. So, on the other side of the ball, Jason, with the Bills, Josh Allen, tremendous talent, MVP candidate. Stephon Diggs, like you said, there's no question. That is such a huge pickup. But what's up with Emmanuel Sanders? I mean, the numbers for him, and I just kind of thought, okay, he's kind of on the downside, still a solid, you know, depth guy, you know, a guy can be a wide receiver two or three or something, but it seems like he's been really good this year. Is it sort of a revival here for him?
Well, sure, right? Like, you look at the Bills, well, the Bills were stacked last year in the wide receiver room, right? Like, they've got Stephon Diggs, guy who led the league in catches and receiving yards. You got Cole Beasley, who was named second team All-Pro, one of the best slot receivers in the league. They got some great production on the outside, on the other side of the field from Gabe Davis, you know, the rookie who was second on the team with seven touchdown catches last year. And so you figured the Bills weren't going to really miss anything when they let John Brown go this offseason. Gabe Davis was just going to step into that number two role and they'd keep humming along. They signed Emmanuel Sanders to a one-year deal. Right, he's coming off of a mediocre at best season in New Orleans, and you think, all right, here's a little bit of a veteran presence, a guy that's been to three Super Bowls, won one of them. Nobody on the Bills roster really has that type of deep playoff experience, or at least they didn't before reaching the AFC title game last year. But nobody's been to a Super Bowl outside of, I think, Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, and Sean McDermott, the head coach, when he went with Carolina. But, the offense has really turned it on. Emmanuel Sanders has fit in, you never would have expected it out of him, right? Like, he's got two touchdown catches in multiple games for the first time since, like, his first Pro Bowl season in Denver. I mean, it's really been a remarkable revival. And this is a guy now who has claimed an off-the-field leadership role with this group as well, which is something you don't expect when you're basically the only new starter walking in the building to a team that's been together for a few years. I mean, he's throwing down. And he takes away from the amount of balls that go to Stephon Diggs, right? Like, the Bills have so many weapons now that Gabe Davis, the guy who had seven touchdown catches last year, is seeing like a third of the offensive snaps, right? Like, Stephon Diggs isn't seeing anywhere near the target share that he saw last year. Cole Beasley has like three catches for 20-some yards in the last 2 weeks combined, and the Bills have hung 78 points on the board in those two games. So Emmanuel Sanders has really rejuvenated his own career. It's hard to say he's rejuvenated the Bills' offense because, I mean, they were fantastic to begin with, but they just have an embarrassment of riches on offense right now. You know, Emmanuel Sanders could go out there and have two catches for 15 yards, and that won't stop the Bills' offense from going off. They'll just go somewhere else. So he's really been a remarkable story this season. Every week, every Thursday, he has his weekly press conference, and he's just so calm and collected and I guess it's easy to be that way when you're winning and winning big, but he's really provided a tremendous leadership presence off the field in addition to what everyone's seeing with the state crazy statistics he's been putting up on Sundays.
Jason Wolf from the Buffalo News has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Jason, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Welcome back to town. Have fun tonight at the game.
I'll see you guys tonight.
We'll have some pretzel bites in the pretz box.
That's right.
Reunion.
Jason Wolf from the Buffalo News, our guest here on Robbie and Rexroad. We'll come back. We'll react to what Jason had to say there. Give our final thoughts on the Titans and the Bills coming up later tonight. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube today and every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by Volunteer State Bank, now with two locations in Murfreesboro. Visit their brand new Murfreesboro location at 2019 Memorial Boulevard. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Joe Rexroad, we have not said this yet today, but congratulations to Tennessee Volunteers legend Candace Parker winning the WNBA title yesterday with the Chicago Sky.
I was waiting for you all to say this, and I was like, if they don't, I got to bring it up in the last segment.
Yeah. Yes, no, we shouldn't have been. Yeah, we should have said it earlier, and good call. And she was very emotional. That's a pretty great story coming back to the hometown and getting it done. And, gave a shout-out to Pat Summitt as well in the aftermath. Pretty awesome. Also, gosh, I keep thinking back to Rio 2016. Wouldn't want Candace Parker on that team, but anyway,
who could use her?
Not bitter.
Also, Diana Taurasi broke the locker room door. Did you see that after the loss?
No, but that doesn't surprise me.
And that's, you know what, unbelievable player and competitor. I was very disappointed to hear that they didn't do media after the game. I mean, come on, it's the championship. Yeah, you know, of the league. Like, you can't, because you're mad about the outcome, not do media. But, you know, things.
Yeah, no, I don't agree
with
that.
You can't do that.
No.
But the bigger story, Candace, that's huge.
The GOAT.
Also, there was something else that I. Oh, well, we haven't really talked about the Vanderbilt loss. I know we'll have Clark Lea on this week.
That's a tough one.
I mean, they had that game won.
Yes, they did.
And I must say, and I swear, this is not just an easy Monday morning quarterback thing because of something that happened. I think it's my biggest pet peeve in football. You're trying to hold a lead and you rush three and drop eight and have zero effect on a quarterback.
Right.
I mean, again, I'm watching that series and, like, the three guys they were rushing were not making the five blockers even work.
Right.
So you may as well just drop 11. Drop 11 players and come up with a 5-6 zone.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll work out for you. Maybe some of those linemen can get in the way. Just put six DBs out there. I don't know. I just know that you're going to lose if you do that. Almost, I swear, way more. And Clark Lea said after the game, they had a strategy to keep things in bounds. South Carolina had no timeouts, but quarterback's not affected. New quarterback, by the way, who came in and now he's a legend. Quarterback's not affected, and you can just let him sit back there and wait for people to clear zones and throw the ball. He's probably going to beat you, and he did.
Right, like nobody's telling you to bring seven at the quarterback, but, you know, four, five.
Four, occasionally send some pressure. Four, mix it up, different stuff.
Yeah.
That was frustrating to watch.
Well, and quite frankly, that's probably the last game on Vanderbilt's schedule that's gettable. Maybe this week.
They should have beat Mississippi State a year ago. Mississippi State has improved, so they probably won't win this week. But this would be.
Well, I guess Missouri too, because apparently all you got to do against Missouri is just turn around, hand that sucker off, man.
Yeah,
they gave up a 3rd and 20 the other day, just a hand off. Up the middle.
It's incredible.
It's really impressive how bad their defense is.
Yeah, so there's two that you would say would be gettable. But I feel terrible for Vanderbilt. You know, I think Mike Wright came in and was really impressed. I mean, he wasn't perfect, but, man, like you see him throwing the ball and running the ball, and it's just tough because Ken Seals is overall the better option, but Mike Wright has to play.
Yeah.
You don't have that many difference makers, playmakers on your team, and he is one.
Also, Daryl Taylor last night, scary injury on Sunday Night Football. All reports are that he's going to be okay.
Good.
He was moving his neck, moving his extremities on the way to the hospital. I think he flew back last night, so that's a pretty good sign, too.
Good, yeah. He's been, what a story he's been.
Yeah.
For them.
Yeah, I mean, he was okay in college, but he's moved on to.
There's way too much of that with Tennessee.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah, Marcus Callaway, pretty good.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Number one receiver for the Saints. Okay.
How about that? That does it for us today. We'll be back in the morning to discuss the Bills and the Titans on Monday Night Football. Should be a good one tonight at Nissan Stadium.
Let's pull an all-nighter.
Let's see what we can do on that front here. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.